The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
I literally went on this pathway of everything that's a conspiracy, I know the truth, to I don't know nothing. All I know is that we got to question everything in this life and even ourselves. I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunt me, destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang, y'all gonna remember the name. Y'all gonna remember the name. What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's episode, we have got on a fantastic guest. He is a massive troublemaker on the internet and in the real world. He's an independent journalist, and he is a YouTuber and content creator, as well as many more things. And this is Luke Rudkowski. Welcome to the show.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me. I think the right word here is autistic savant. Some people would describe that's like the word of the day that we've been kind of like making fun of throughout our day. But yeah, thank you so much for having me.
No doubt. Not of autistic people, because that could sound wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
no. No doubt. Luke, I've done a brief intro there, but for people who are not familiar, please introduce yourself.
I've been an independent content creator for 20 plus years. I've hit the ground running all the way back in 2004, all the way back in New York City, right after 9/11. That played a major role in my life and my kind of political career, as I got very active. I got very engaged as there was a lot of crazy things developing in New York City. I decided to, of course, do everything in my power to try to help as many people as I could during those very troubling, crazy, insane times, and it led me to a life of documenting stuff, showing people stuff, and then having conversations about issues that a lot of powerful people didn't find convenient, but I found absolutely necessary to have. And ever since then, I've been shooting a lot of different videos. I've been traveling all over the place. I've been investigating different things. I've been interviewing a lot of very fascinating people. I've been forcing interviews on a lot of fascinating people as well. And I just try to speak truth to power as much as I can. And I think there's a lot of power. I think there's a lot of unaccountability. And I think we need to speak up more than ever now, especially in the crucial time that we are in.
No doubt, man. Well, I'm curious to know a little bit more about your background. Did you grow up in New York, or where do you spend your childhood?
Grew up in Poland, first half of my life, and then we moved
where in
to
Poland?
Gdańsk, Poland.
Okay, yeah. So that's in the north, right?
Yep. So my family has a lot of like very rich history there. A lot of people who weren't happy with the communists, a lot of people who weren't happy with the fascists, a lot of people who went through a lot of turmoil, a lot of suffering, a lot of chaos because of big government on the left and on the right. Mm-hmm. So my family really doesn't like communists, really doesn't like fascists, and there's a lot of history, there's a lot of bad blood, there's a lot of suffering that was caused by all these kind of big governments that influenced me very significantly, especially when it came to my kind of understanding of the world. About the age of 10, I moved to New York City. I moved to Brooklyn. This was in the 90s, and Brooklyn was definitely totally different than the hipster corporate hellscape that it is now. And growing up in New York City also kind of it influenced me a lot, seeing the things that I saw, experiencing the things that I saw, and living a pretty wild and crazy life in New York City that only continued to get more wild when I traveled outside of New York City.
Mm. Well, do you remember what it was like as a 10-year-old kid from Poland coming to, was it your first time in the U.S. when you moved here?
Yes.
What was that experience like?
Miserable. It was horrible.
Okay.
I had the bowl cut. So I literally like had the blonde hair that just like went all around here. I had the weird clothes. I had the lunchbox that no one recognized. I had no understanding or comprehension of the language.
Okay.
So automatically I was bullied right away. I went to a kind of predominantly very ethnic school, so I definitely stood out there. I was like a beam of light with how pale I was. And that definitely made me the target for a lot of different bullies. And I really do think getting bullied as significantly as I did, like my first introduction to school was literally getting a drop kicked in front of the whole class assembly.
Oh, wow.
And then like kids pointing at me, teachers just watching, security not giving a damn. This was you know, New York City. This was Brooklyn in the 90s. This was a different ball game. Mm. Even when it came to school, kids were just extremely savage, extremely brutal, extremely abusive towards against each other. Something that, of course, would absolutely not be tolerated today. In some ways, yes. In some ways, that's good. In some ways, that's bad. But
yeah.
It was rough because I couldn't speak to anyone. Mm-hmm. No one understood me.
Yeah.
No one spoke Polish. There was no other Polish people there. And I'm kind of like, here's the weird kid. I try to make friends with people, and they would like push me away, shun me away. It was, you know, routinely just getting beat up, routinely just getting, you know, jumped and physically abused. Teachers just didn't give a damn. Teachers were also just absolutely freaking racist as well, which was you know, surprising.
Towards you as a Polish student?
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember just going through absolutely just atrocious experiences where they like wouldn't let me use the bathroom, or they would like point and say things, and like everyone would laugh, and I'm like, what are they even saying? They didn't even have ESL when I was there in the beginning, and it wasn't fun, it was definitely character building.
Yes,
it definitely made me who I am today. That this is why I think I have this kind of larger fight against injustice, but it also made me a fighter. It made me someone who understood the world's not fair.
Yeah.
It's never going to be fair.
Yeah.
But you have to make yourself someone who is able to defend themselves, stand up for themselves, and fight for themselves, because unless you do, you're going to be conquered and destroyed. Mm. And I look back at those times, even though they were extremely difficult, I find them extremely necessary. I find that I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now if it wasn't for that kind of larger abuse that I was experiencing. And it truly made me who I am today.
No doubt, man. How did you deal with that as a kid? Do you think that resilience is something you got from your parents and your family and your background, or did it come from somewhere else? The reason I ask that is because, look, as children, everyone goes through all sorts of stuff, both positive and negative. And I find what's interesting is some people will come out of that environment and they will use that as an excuse to become abusers themselves, or to bully other people, or to be violent, or other people will use it as an excuse to be an utter failure for the rest of your life and never achieve anything and go back and blame it all on your childhood. Someone like yourself, you've taken that energy and that perceptive, you know, that perspective, and it sounds like you've used that almost like rocket fuel throughout your adult life and through your career to do all the things that you do, to be out there, to use your voice, to fight the battles that you want to fight. I'm just curious it's one of those things I'm curious about in general, just how those type of experiences shape different people. But I'm wondering where you got that resilience from.
Trauma has a way of making you or breaking you. So you have a choice, you have a decision. Something horrible happened to you. Okay, am I going to let this destroy me, destroy my identity, destroy my viewpoint on life, destroy my destiny? Or am I going to use it towards growing, towards learning, towards building, towards making myself more resilient and stronger to face the adversities coming my way. I remember there was a couple incidences where I was doing my videos and like a security guard tackled me, or like someone handled me roughly, and everyone's like, "Oh my!" And I'm like, "This is nothing. This is like this is absolutely nothing compared to just everything that I've been through in my freaking life. Like this is fine." I did see a lot of crazy stuff, and I don't like to really talk about it, but there was a lot of trauma. There was like shootings, stabbings, and like crazy stuff that I saw early on in my life that was extremely traumatic. And I always knew from, you know, the people around me, you know, those are very important moments in your life where you have to get your ish together, because if you don't, they will absolutely have a very negative effect on your life moving forward. I know you have kind of, that's a good question. I'm trying to extrapolate how did I respond to this? I responded to it the way I did because I had no other choice. I had no other decision. Mm-hmm. It's either get the crap beat out of you or start to learn how to box. Doing push-ups, start working out. So like I just started working out. I started like, you know, trying to learn how to fight. I started to try to learn English. And I was like, there's no easy way out of this. I was telling my parents, I was like, we got to go back to Poland. This is crazy. This is horrible. I don't want to be here. This is, it's unsafe. It's not clean. I'm like, you know, I'm getting jumped. I'm getting like beat up. I'm getting stomped on. I'm getting milk poured on me all the time. Like, this is like, why am I here? Like, what are you doing? And they're like, we don't have any other choice. We don't have any other decision.
Have you got siblings out of the interest?
No. They had me, and they were like, that's it. That's enough. I wish I had siblings. I always grew up wishing I had a big family, wishing I had a brother or sister, someone I could look after, someone I could be there for. But sadly, that wasn't in the cards.
Yeah.
But I was, you know, even as a little kid, I'm like, hey, you know, because it was extremely lonely. It was extremely isolating. You got no one to talk to. No one in your community speaks your language. You have no one to be friends with. And I came from a situation in Poland where there was a crap ton of family members. There was uncles. There was aunts. There was nephews. There was, you know, all the kids that spoke your language and all the kids that you grew up with and all the kids you were playing on the school grounds with. And all that was just gone. It's like you're by yourself. And then here you're just getting the ish kicked out of you every single day. Almost. So it's like, okay, well, let's watch TV. Let's try to learn the language. And that's essentially how I learned English. This is why I still have a lot of Lucisms, a lot of words that don't make sense that I make up in my mind that kind of combines the Slavic language with the English language as well. This is why I make, you know, spelling mistakes, because I grew up in public school in New York City. They don't teach you anything there. Mm. They don't teach you nothing. And my education definitely wasn't the best, but I did everything I could to get out of that situation as fast as I could. And I remember there was like one defining moment where there was a fight between me and one of the main bullies growing up, like a year and a half after going through all the insanity that I was going through, fighting that bully, beating him up, and standing up for myself, and finally gaining some respect, finally gaining some friends. Situation kind of turned around. And then your mindset kind of changes, and then you slowly start adopting the mind of the bully as well, which is an interesting paradox that kind of happens as well. And then it's kind of like, it's very animalistic. You watch a lot of those like animal shows where they're like hunting, and they have different people targeting the weak people in the herd. It's kind of fascinating to see how a lot of that unfolded, and then I caught myself kind of becoming a bully too afterwards, after learning how to like defend myself, after learning how to fight. I was like, wait, hold on. Like my parents actually were like, what are you doing? Why are you being so tough on this kid? Why are you doing that? For some people, the internal dialogue goes that you kind of need to do this as a way to make sure that the weakest people in your herd become strong.
Yeah.
I think there's some kind of that mentality, but there's also trauma sharing. There's also passing down trauma that's also very evident, because the kid that was bullying me was someone who was being, I later found out, abused at the home.
Yep,
he was someone
surprised.
Who was left back twice. He had facial hair. No one had facial hair. He had facial hair. He was like two heads above me. And this kid was going through a lot of trauma, and all he knew was kind of trauma, and then he kind of passed that trauma on to other people and bullied other people as well until someone stood up to him and fought back and decided to defend themselves. And I remember coming to this country, and we weren't that well off, but there was one defining moment, the one defining incident that, of course, just made me snap, just made me freaking lose it. And I think this answers your question perfectly. What made me kind of do this? Mm-hmm. One, it's okay, I'm getting my butt kicked every single day here. I'm getting bullied every single day here. I'm being made fun of every single day here. This is enough. There's a breaking point that happens. I remember, we weren't that well off when we first came to this country. And then once like a month or I don't know exactly the time frame now, but once in a while, my mom would surprise me with a bit of chocolate. And yeah. I'm like, I was sitting alone at the lunch table, not having any friends, not being able to talk to anyone. And I opened them, I'm like, yes, this is the one time I got some chocolate. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, this is, I'm so happy I got some chocolate. Like, yeah, I was so excited. And then this bully, Jonathan, with the facial hair, two heads bigger than me, literally walks up to me, grabs the candy bar, like makes direct eye contact with me. And then like starts to eat it right in front of me.
Yeah.
I freaking snapped. Oh, I went crazy. I went absolutely insane. I was just like, I literally grabbed the chair, picked up the chair, like swung the chair right at him.
Wow.
And like started fighting. And then like, that was it.
Do you know what's mad is like when I hear certain people talk about certain American public schools, and I know, look, everyone's going to have a different experience, but it sounds exactly the same as when I hear dudes who have like spent time in freaking prison.
Yes, but
talking
worse.
About prison. It sounds exactly the same in terms of the dynamic.
A kid shot himself in my class.
Yeah.
Like literally, like I was in a class. I left the class. I'm walking. I hear bam.
What?
Kid was playing with a gun. Himself in the leg. In the class that I was just in.
Yeah.
But no, it gets crazier. Like I had a friend that I was on the basketball team with that got killed because of a machete.
Oh, wow.
In Union Square, he just got macheted to death in a gang fight. Yeah. I had another friend that got shot in the knee. I got another friend that got shot in the butt with a .22. Mm-hmm. The round ricocheted, hit his heart, died. So like growing up in that kind of like larger kind of situation, and again, a lot of tough guys are like, I'm not tough. I'm not. People are not meant to go through this.
Yes.
But that's the reality of life. Life is hard. It's very difficult. The faster you learn it's unfair, the more you're able to kind of navigate it in a way where you're not affected by all the negativity as much as everyone else. And you learn to turn the negative into a positive because mm-hmm. you have no other choice. You have no other decision here. You're stuck in a situation that's not nice. It's not good. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do in your own life? How are you going to be determining your path, your future? And for me, it was ever since learning at a very young age, no one's coming to save you.
Mm-hmm.
Like you got to help yourself. You can't go back to Poland. You can't go back to your family. What are you going to do?
Man.
Well,
so tell me about the experience. So you're in the school. So you come over to the States at 10 years old. You're in this school, you're going through all this stuff. Eventually, you learn the language. It sounds like you primarily used, what, like mainstream media to help you learn?
Yeah, it was just the TV. Just watching the TV.
That's so dope. Any particular shows?
I remember I was really into like wrestling.
Okay.
I used to love like WWE wrestling. And then my parents didn't have cable, but on like Saturdays, they used to play like small clips of some of the matches that they did on like Saturday morning. And MASH too, for some strange reason.
Okay, yeah.
I was like, that's the only thing that's kind of on TV. I'm like, let me watch some MASH. Gilligan's Island, that was another one. What else was I watching? Jerry Springer.
Jerry Springer, gosh.
That was another very top Americana kind of TV show as well. I'm trying to remember what else I was watching. Power Rangers were pretty big too.
So would it be fair to say that when you first came to the USA, you did not like the country? It doesn't sound like
I hated it.
Yeah, it does not sound like you stepped into the American dream.
It was dirty. It was disgusting. It was like, it wasn't the best neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And it was just like concrete, construction block. In Poland, even with the Soviet style kind of housing, you would have them kind of spaced out and you have these huge buildings. Here, it was just everything on top of each other.
Yes.
Everything was dirty. Everything was smelly. There was garbage everywhere. And I was like, there's graffiti everywhere. Like, this is a crap hole. Mm-hmm. Why am I here? I didn't want to be here. there were roaches, rats everywhere. It wasn't fun.
Yeah.
But Still a lot better as far as the opportunities I have here than Poland.
I hear that.
Poland, I don't have a lot of opportunities. My family doesn't have as many opportunities. Here, you have a lot of opportunities, especially with kind of an immigration mindset where you kind of look at all the Americans and they're like, you have all this and you're taking advantage and you're not taking advantage of these opportunities and situations. Like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah, much easier to see as an outsider.
Yeah. You can make your own business here.
You could
sell a bunch of stuff here. Like you could learn all this stuff for free. And I'm like, I want it all. It definitely is a different mindset than the kind of European mindset.
For sure. Yeah. So after you finished school, what was next for you?
I got very active and engaged at a very young age. I had one of my girlfriend's uncle give me Behold a Pale Horse.
Okay.
Because like growing up in New York City, you automatically have kind of a distrust of authority of police officers, especially if you're seeing the things that you're seeing. There was horrible stories of like police officers that were undercover cops, but they were literally like kidnapping women and forcing their way with, this is YouTube. We're going to be, I can't say what they actually did here, but
essay.
Yeah. But some of the cops were more criminal than the actual criminals.
Yeah. And this was all in New York.
New York City. There was a couple incidences where they like roughed me up and they, beat me up too in some instances as well. And I'm like, I don't like authority. Like, this is not fun.
What were these type of situations that were getting you into crossing paths with the police to begin with?
Well, probably just hanging around with
the
wrong crowd.
Gotcha.
Incidences or situations that just completely got out of hand. And, you're kind of there. Cops show up. They don't know what's going on. They're just going to grab anybody. And like kind of, many times, I was innocent. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I wasn't. Just to be frank and honest, the cops were just doing their job. But growing up in that kind of environment, you kind of had more of a distrust towards police officers. Mm-hmm. And then I shared that. I had this Puerto Rican family that kind of like I was hanging out with because my girlfriend was Puerto Rican and they had a huge family. And then the uncle gave me Behold a Pale Horse by William Cooper. And reading that book, it just like opened my mind up to, holy cow, there's so much that we don't know. There's so much that we're being lied to about. Mm-hmm. And then my friend started to torrent videos from Alex Jones.
Uh-oh, here we go.
And I still remember having this kind of larger awakening after watching, I don't know if it was 9/11 Road to Tyranny. I forgot the exact one. But back in the day, you couldn't just like click a YouTube video and watch it. You needed to torrent it. You needed to wait a day, 2 days, sometimes 3 days to download in incredibly slow internet speeds an entire video. And you never know what you would get. And he downloaded a 3-hour crazy Alex Jones documentary. Mm-hmm. And he was like, gosh, you can't believe what I just saw. You got to watch this documentary. It's going to blow your mind. And then like we were like in his room watching it. And I remember there was like a police car that was like going along the street with its sirens. And we're like, oh, they're coming for us. Like, they're going to get us. Like, no. And it was hyper paranoid. And it was sensationalistic. There was a lot of fear associated with it. But luckily, the cops were just passing by.
Yeah.
And they didn't arrest us. They weren't mad because we were watching this documentary that we couldn't watch. But I remember after seeing that long kind of documentary, hearing Alex Jones describe everything that happened to us on 9/11, that happened after 9/11. I remember just having this sense. I remember walking to one of the train stops, being on top of it, overlooking the city. And I kind of just like felt, I knew like this was going to be something that I'm going to dedicate my life to.
Okay.
This is something that I know I'm going to do everything in my power. This is going to be my career path. This is going to be my life.
When you say this, what specifically are you referring to?
Telling people the larger truths about the world that they weren't understanding of. Because if you watch those old school like Alex Jones videos, it's him. There's like a green screen in the background. And he's just like hammering in like martial law and FEMA camps and that got ingrained with me. And I'm like, there's so much things that we don't know about. There's so many bad things. There's so many bad people out there. I want to do everything in my power to address this, to stop this. And then obviously growing up the way I did, I kind of had this already in my system where, like, I got to fight injustice. Mm-hmm. There's so much injustice. You know, the school kids, you know, they don't know what's right. The teachers are horrible. The security guards are horrible. Everyone in authority is failing me. Like, yes. This is all a lie. We're all being lied to about everything. And I was like, I want to, and I just had this feeling. It was such a weird, paradoxical kind of feeling where I was like, I knew this was going to be everything that I dedicate my life to. Mm-hmm. And I was still extremely young. I think I was like 14, 15.
Okay.
And I'm like, this is what I'm going to be doing. And I remember trying to get active. I remember trying to get engaged. I remember writing up like dissertations without any kind of pauses, without any kind of paragraph structure. And I would just write, you're being lied to about this and you're, and this and this and that. And then there's the crack epidemic. And then there's the Iran-Contra. And then there's, you know, JFK. And then there's, you know, and I'm just, I'm dying to find one of those papers. Because me and my friend, we kind of wrote this up, horribly written, that's public education for you, dissertation of like, you're being lied to about everything. And we were like, we got to spread the word. How are we going to spread the word? This was before we had access to like cell phones, before we could tweet, before we could do anything. And I was like, how am I going to spread the word? We wrote this out and we decided the best way to spread this message was to put on masks. And like balaclavas.
Okay, yeah.
And at 2 o'clock in the morning, jump on the New York City subway system and then insert our dissertation into all the advertisements. Mm. So there's a way where you could put a paper in through the advertisements, and we were like, we're going to wake everyone up. And we were literally like idiots. 2 o'clock in the morning, like run around from like train station to train station, making people freak out, like absolutely terrified because you got these two like young hoodlums jumping in with the balaclavas on because we were hyper. Paranoid that they're going to get us and they're going to assassinate us for doing what we were doing. And we were like, you know, jumping from one train to another train. And that was my first kind of action when it came to trying to, you know, tell people what was up and what was going on. Then I went out to an end the war protest before the Iraq war started.
Okay.
So they were building up for the Iraq war. I think even earlier than 2004. I don't remember the exact dates to be certain here. I have to look back in my calendar. I have so many videos, too, that we shot of that particular time. But I went to an anti-Iraq war protest, and there was a guy there holding a kind of larger banner saying, you know, we were lied to about 9/11. I'm like, who are these guys? I got to get to know them. Introduced myself, and I was like, you guys are one of the few guys speaking the truth here. Everyone's spreading weird communistic, socialistic kind of nonsense. There's a few people who actually do want to stop the war and the cause of it. The cause of it was 9/11. This was a group of individuals that was telling people the larger truth about what actually happened that particular day. And I just automatically befriended them, got to know them, started working with them, and then working my butt off for them. And then we started to... instead of wearing balaclavas 2 o'clock in the morning, scaring the crap out of people, we made flyers. And then we gave out those flyers when we had like signs outside of Ground Zero every Saturday for many, many years after 9/11.
Yeah. I have a question which is very broad, and it might be a difficult one to answer. But how do you know what is the truth? How do you come to the truth? Because a word as simple as truth has become, truth is something that should be objective, right? It should be objective. I mean, almost by its very definition, it should be objective, but we're living in this world, and maybe we always have, where the concept of truth is extraordinarily subjective, right? You have the different narratives, you have all of this conflicting information out there. And so even when someone says like, okay, you know, this person is speaking the truth about this subject or this is the truth about this, in your mind, how do you even determine what is true? Because there's lots of things where, you know, I don't know what's true. I don't really know what happened about certain incidents historically or even certain things that are going on today. I'm like, okay, I see this opinion. I see that opinion. This person's saying this. This is saying this. I think this one makes more sense than that one. But ultimately, I wasn't there. I don't have all the info. I don't explicitly know what's true. So What do you think about that as an independent journalist?
No, you're definitely right, especially now in a day and age where disinformation and misinformation is being normalized and also weaponized. If you look at Cass Sunstein, Obama's information czar, when he was at Harvard, he was writing entire dissertations about, we need to make sure that anyone raising questions about particular events specifically is going to be lumped in with some of the craziest people who are going to be making the largest assertions on this that we're going to be bankrolling and financing here in order to make everyone look crazy. So this is out of the kind of not just the Obama administration, but previous administrations' kind of playbook here. You bring up an important kind of assessment here, because a lot of people believe truth is kind of subjective. It's up to interpretation. It's their own experiences, and it's up to their own kind of emotions and feelings as well. Also, depending on how their mind works, because if you look at a lot of court proceedings, eyewitness testimony isn't really treated as seriously, because people replay events and change them in their own minds.
Yes.
So I understand the larger kind of complexities when it comes to saying, oh, I'm just speaking truth.
Yeah, exactly.
To me, it's just an easy way of kind of saying, hey, there's a lot of things we're told that absolutely is not true. And one of the biggest things that for me was truthful was, after 9/11, the government was telling us the air is safe to breathe. It's totally fine. Don't worry. Just go back down there. Go back to your jobs. Do whatever you want to do. But there was articles in the New York Times and the New York Post and the Daily News talking about how those buildings were filled with asbestos.
Okay.
And the government coming out and saying, don't worry, the air is safe to breathe. That's totally fine. Even though there was articles beforehand saying, hey, there's a lot of bad chemicals here. It takes one kind of nanoparticle of asbestosis to start and create like lung cancer in your lungs. And this is the dust that everyone is breathing in. This is the dust that was in my neighborhood that I could write my name in. So when it comes to that one specific issue, I think it's fair to say that we weren't told the truth here. We weren't told what was actually really happening here. And this is what kind of started this kind of larger truth movement. And that was a pretty clear one. That was a pretty obvious one. That was one where we weren't told the truth. The government tested the air. They got their findings. They got their studies, and they got reports saying, "Hey, it's hazardous here. People are going to die here."
Yeah.
But the EPA, Christy Todd Whitman, Condoleezza Rice, they're like, "Oh, well, it's safe to breathe. We're just going to take this section out here." So they denied people the truth.
Yes.
They denied people the actual science.
I think it's easier to tell something is untrue than to know what is true.
Exactly.
I think it's easier to say, okay, let's take, for example, the past, the whole 2020 to 2022 period, right? All the stuff that happened with, I don't know what I can say on YouTube.
The global sickness,
right? I know a lot of stuff that was said, which like it absolutely was not true. And I can say very clearly, like certain narratives, it was like, well, that is just not true, right? There's things, it's like you can objectively prove this thing to be false, right? If they said, look, anyone who goes and takes this jab, you're not going to get this, you're not going to spread it. We're like, that was false, right? Demonstrably, provably false. In terms of what was exactly true about the origin of the illness, we don't know, right? Some things make more sense than other things, but it's like, all right, like unless you were, no one was there. Like unless you were there and you can trace it all exactly, I can say, okay, that one doesn't seem true. Yeah. That one doesn't seem true.
But unless you're Peter Daszak or the Bat Lady.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. But I think with a lot of these narratives, I think, like I said, I think it's easier to point out lies or mistruths than to know exactly what is true. I think similar things with, all the controversial things, like when it comes to people talking about, how legitimate are votes and whatever, right? You can see, okay, wait, not everything is above board. I think you can say confidently, okay, this is not all totally adding, but to what extent, right? You have people who are like, oh no, the entire thing is a scam. Yeah. The entire thing is fabricated and it's all fraud or whatever. I'm like, I don't think it's quite that far. But also it's not all above board.
Yeah. And this is how I kind of made my transition from being like an activist towards a journalist, because I realized I'm standing there. I'm like, we have the truth. We know the truth. people are like, yeah, you're full of crap. No one really knows the truth. There's religious people on the corner of the streets being like, I have the truth here. This is the my God is the truth here. For them, it is. Mm-hmm. But then I learned, if you really want to change people's minds, you don't tell them the truth. You kind of show them information and you let them determine what they actually believe about a particular event themselves. You lead them down a pathway where you show them evidence and information. And I transitioned early on from my kind of career, being like, we got the truth, to look at this CBS News article talking about the airlift of evil from Afghanistan to Pakistan. Before the United States invaded, they flew out a lot of the high-level Taliban leaders and probably the CIA Tim Osman guy from Afghanistan into Pakistan. Why is this happening? Hey, look at the opium production that skyrocketed after the United States got involved in Afghanistan. And then I would literally be on the streets with news articles, and I would show them news articles, and I would show them evidence, and I would show them photos. And I'd be like, and they're like, what happened here? What do you think happened? I'm like, I don't know.
Yes.
You got to make up your own mind, but the burden of truth should always be on the government. It shouldn't be on us. So the government has a lot to answer for. The government has a lot of things that they should be accountable for, transparent about. They're not. And I think the question that you kind of asked leads us to a point where the government puts us in a position where we kind of entrap ourselves by claiming to know the truth, being the truth tellers, exactly. When in reality, all we could do is kind of lift the veil, mm-hmm. let people see it, let people interpret it, and make up their own minds about this particular situation. Because if you try to hammer in a wooden block that it through a circle peg, you're not going to do it.
Yes,
but if you allow individuals to just see information, to be able to make up their own minds about it, they're more able to change their minds than if you go to them and say, "I know the truth." And this was a transformation in my career that was pretty big, because when you're young, you're again egotistical. You think you know all the answers. You don't.
Yes,
and the older you get, the more you kind of find out that you don't really know anything, right?
Yeah,
the
more, it's weird.
Yeah, it's so weird. And then you understand. You don't understand it when you're young, but you can't. I could tell you wisdoms, and we could go through quotes, and we could try to make you understand what you go through the aging process, but you can't unless you actually experience it. Mm. And the older I get, the more I realize of things that I'm completely ignorant about, and I'm ignorant about a lot of stuff. We only have a kind of brain function and brain power to focus on specific issues, but we can't know everything. So this has been something that's been important in my transition, in my kind of news reporting, that moved from I have the truth to look at this.
Check this out.
Look what he says. Mm-hmm. Let's go question this politician. Let's go ask him some questions. Let's see what he says. Let's get down to the bottom of this. And let's actually connect the dots here and put things together. And then you make up your own mind from here. And I think that's more of an honest, earnest, real kind of way than someone who's kind of blinded by their own kind of path for justice.
Yes.
You know.
How do you prevent yourself from going completely off the deep end?
Very good question, because there's a lot of people who have gone off the
deep
end.
There are. And I say this because, as well, in my own personal experience, I've seen a lot of it, particularly in the past 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. I see conspiracy theories. There's people who call me a conspiracy theorist. I'm sure there's plenty of people who call you a conspiracy theorist. But if you deal with and you encounter like people who are deep down the conspiracy theorist rabbit hole,
everything's a conspiracy.
That's how I know I'm not a conspiracy theorist, right? Because they're the ones who think, you know, I'm sure, you know, they'll call you controlled opposition. They'll say, call me controlled opposition. I've seen rumors circulating on the internet that I don't exist and that I'm an advanced artificial intelligence and that I'm not real. I've seen rumors that I'm funded by all sorts of groups, or I'm part of the Illuminati, or I'm a Satanist, or I'm secretly a Freemason. I've seen that I'm in the CIA. I'm part of the FBI. Like, I'm not even American. And I see some of these things floating out about me, let alone other people. And when I see those conversations happening, the people who believe these things, they wholeheartedly, you know, these are people who call themselves truthers. And I'm like, well, I am me. And I am 100% certain that none of these accusations you're making about me are correct. And then they're pointing at all these other people saying, you know, this person is this and this person is this and this. And I'm just like, okay, y'all have gone completely off the deep end.
And no matter what happens, no matter what victory, it's never good enough. It's always a conspiracy within a conspiracy.
Exactly.
And
these are the people who think, they think Alex Jones is controlled up. They think, right, like no one, anyone who has, I don't know, 100,000 or more followers to them is not some type of controlled opposition who's funded by some shadowy cabal somewhere. And yeah, how do you, being involved so heavily in the social and cultural and political debates and so on, I'm curious as to how certain people just maintain that level of sanity and truth seeking, but without going so far that you reach the level of paranoia where it's just like, oh, every single thing is, I cannot trust anything I see or hear or anybody I speak to.
So I'm not speaking to a hologram right now? I'm just
trying. I am real. I mean, I've existed for quite a while. I mean, unless we're all just in this giant simulation, which I guess is also possible, in which case none of us are real.
Exactly. That's another possibility here. I think having an open mind is key. Having humor is key.
Yeah.
Not taking yourself too seriously is key. And I kind of pride myself on trying to integrate all of that into what I do. I think one of the things that to me has given me a kind of a reverence and ability to do this for so long is being able to meditate and to take time and to do mindful exercises and be able to ground myself in this kind of larger pursuit of trying to be the best version of myself. And as long as I strive for that, I'm good. But there's a lot of people who have lost their minds that have gone off the deep end, that no matter what you say, no matter what you do, you're controlled opposition.
Exactly.
You win, you have a major victory. No, it's not good enough. It's a part of a larger program that's meant to hurt you and make you do that.
I don't even want to cut you off there, but do you know what I've realized, I think just in the past couple months, is that there are certain worldviews which have no room for heroes.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think someone can become so skeptical and so cynical and so embittered and disempowered with all of these things, and they reach a point where they're just so skeptical that heroes are not allowed in the narrative. There cannot be someone who is on their side. Anyone who seems to be on their side, that's got to be a controlled op. Anything that seems like, oh, actually, maybe we're having a little victory here. Nope, that's just part of the grander scheme to entrap humanity and enforce the tyranny or whatever narrative they believe. It's a little bit like, people who are super doomsday cultish about, like the Branch Covidians were, right? You try to explain to them that, maybe this illness is not quite as bad as what they initially believed, and they get angry about it. Or when you have the people who think, climate change is going to destroy the world within the next, 10 years or so, and you try to prevent information or arguments which say, okay, maybe it's not quite as catastrophic as you think, and they don't want to hear it. They want everything to be
a conspiracy.
Bad. Yes, they want it to be bad. They want the doom. They want the gloom. They don't want anyone out there who's like, hey, actually, this is good or this is a victory.
Yeah, I think some of those people are government sock puppet accounts, and I think some of those people are like...
So they're the controlled op?
It's a controlled op, but then a controlled op.
Oh, wow.
It's multi-layered here, but I also do believe there is a faction of actual authentic individuals who have lost their minds, who aren't sane, who aren't rational, and they're so conceived that the world is so horrible that they will find any reason to see it as horrible. And that's why your reticular activation system is so important in your life. This is why your thought process is so important in your life. Tony Robbins always talks about the kind of mental science behind celebrating your victories. You have to celebrate your victories. You have to set goals for yourself. You have to try to achieve something. You have to try to do something bigger than just yourself for your own selfish needs. When
the future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Elon Musk bought Twitter. Everyone's like, it's all part of the science. Yep. And I'm like,
That's actually a great example.
And I'm like, Tim, you see that cognac you got there for $15,000? We're going to crack that open right now. Open it. And he's like, okay, yeah. And then I don't even drink. I don't drink. I had a little drink because I wanted to celebrate this moment. And it's important for you to celebrate, and it's important to you for you to be happy, because if you're happy, that to me is now a modern day act of resistance. I think the system is so sophisticated in a way that it has this larger kind of dehumanist, demoralizing agenda that is meant to be there, that has been planting information that sets people on such a trajectory that they can't even successfully resist the kind of slave mind that is being instituted against them in not just the actual conspiracies, but the conspiracy within the conspiracy. And this is why I said there might be even sock puppet accounts that do this in order to convince other people that it's okay to think like this. Mm-hmm. So I do believe we are being shaped, we are being manipulated through our kind of algorithms that we see every single day. And I think there is a concerted effort to try to bring people to this kind of stage because they become absolutely ineffective at doing anything good for themselves or good for the world. Yes. And the government wants you in a position, the government or the elites or the Illuminati, whatever you might think, they want you in a position where you're absolutely helpless. Those people are just as helpless as the sheeple. Those people are just as helpless as the NPCs. Those people are 100%. Just as helpless as everyone else who has their head in the sand, because you have your head down in the sand, down in the rabbit hole, too much. Like you're just as exposed as all those ostriches with their buttocks up in the air by believing all the conspiracies. And this is why it's important to have discernment. This is why it's important to have critical thinking. And this is why I think your question was so important, because I literally went on this pathway of everything that's a conspiracy, I know the truth, to I don't know nothing. All I know is that we got to question everything in this life, and even ourselves, even where we're going, because there's such a level of kind of sophistication between what's happening through this kind of larger hive mind that I think we still don't understand it. But as long as we focus on becoming the best version of ourselves, becoming stronger, having great families, having great relationships, having great success with business, and celebrating every victory we have, I think if we align our goals around that, I think we're going to be good. And this is why I keep saying, don't believe me, do your own homework. And another thing that I always keep saying that my YouTube audience is probably sick of is being happy, being healthy, being strong is a modern day act of resilience.
Love
act on it, play on it, enjoy life. Life is short. Mm-hmm. It could be taken away at any moment, at any time. And when it can, don't have any regrets. Why would you want to have any kind of regret? Learning how short life is growing up in my early years, I had a really good friend of mine that passed away when I was like 21. Showed me life is short. And that's what kind of motivated me to do what I do, to take the risks that I did, to have the experiences that I did, to share them and to try to motivate other people to get out of this kind of slave mind and get into a life that is worth living, that is fun, that is amazing, that you actually leave better when you leave this world.
Yes.
So that's my end goal. That's what I want to do. That's what I want to focus on.
Man, that's powerful, Luke. Yeah. Man, you touched on so many points that I think are so interesting there. And I agree with you. I think that the demoralization agenda is something that people massively underestimate. And as a result, they themselves fall into. It's almost like I don't know what term people want to use. You know, you can call it, people say they, you can call it the matrix, you can call it the deep state or whatever. But there are two positions of essential helplessness, right? There's just being so naive and ignorant and gullible that you don't question anything, right? You fall for the psyop because you 100% trust the government and you totally trust like everything they're saying is above board. Anyone who is a dissenter is a conspiracy theorist and they're just crazy and, you know, whatever phobias and isms they probably also happen to have as well. So you have the where someone's just like a puppet, right? They're just anything you tell them, you just say it came from an expert, say it came from the government, whatever. They believe it wholesale, very easy to psyop. But then on the flip side, you've got people who have gone completely to the opposite end of the spectrum and they're completely blackpilled. They're fully demoralized. They think that there is no way to win. There is no room for heroes in their worldview. No victory can be celebrated because any victory is just another step on the globalist elite's plan to destroy humanity or whatever it is. And as you said, they are now completely ineffective as well. They're equally ineffective because it's like, well, if you don't even believe that you can win, if you think no matter what you do, no matter what we do, what's the...
Not just ineffective, right? Detrimental.
Detrimental.
They hurt the morale. They hurt the any kind of possibility of resisting this or fighting this, since they know that there's no way of winning.
Yes.
And if you keep spreading that kind of mentality, it's a cancer.
It's
something that grows within you and spurs on this kind of defeatist, pessimistic soy boy beta. I want to say another word here. I can't. We're on YouTube. Energy that's kind of like... It's tiresome. And you know there's going to be a bunch of people who are going to be watching this video and be like, they're just CIA shills trying
exactly.
to make me not this is the part of the program and they're to control that. And I'm like, dude, just try to enjoy your life.
Yeah.
All right, touch some grass, have some fun.
Do you know what it is as well? Is I think that skepticism is like the first skepticism and or cynicism is like the first step towards waking up. Right? It's the first step towards knowledge, essentially, or wisdom. But it's not the last step. It's not just like, oh, okay, the first step is questioning things. So now my modus operandi is that every single thing, every single person, I can see it with my own eye. No matter what, I will not believe anything. I am now skeptical and cynical of everything and everyone. And I think that when people get like that, they sort of reinforce each other because they think that that is almost like the supreme wisdom,
mm-hmm.
right? I think the person who thinks that everything and everyone is a psyop or is controlled op or whatever term they want to use, they feel kind of superior in a way. It's like, look, I'm the one who's enlightened, right? They're looking at you and me and they're like, oh, you know, you're part way there, but like I'm fully down the rabbit hole, right? Like once you know that, and you can't disprove them as well. It's almost like it can be a sort of paranoid right-wing version of wokeism, right? Where you have these people who are on the extreme left and they bought fully into all the critical theories and all of that. And you can't really get them out of the position. You have these people, let's say, for example, they'll hold the belief that all white people are racist and oppressors and all black people are... oppressed and are victims of some type of systemic, institutional, structural racism or whatever. Anything you say to them or anything anyone says, they will just twist it to reinforce their narrative, right? If a white person is like, hey, I'm not racist, they're like, well, that's your white fragility that you're not owning up to your racism, therefore you are racist, right? Because you haven't adopted my worldview. If I, as a black person, say, they'll be like, well, you know, that's your own internalized racism and, you know, you're upholding the system of white supremacy. And so, you know, they might even say that, well, you're not even black because, like, you don't want, no matter what, it's this sort of like intellectual judo mm-hmm. where, yep. where no matter what the narrative and no matter what someone's quote unquote lived experiences or whatever, they will use it as an example to reaffirm their own narrative. Like they so it gets very frustrating where you're just like, you know, I can't really have a conversation with this person because they're just so dug into the narrative that even if I provide very clear counter examples and reasons why this super dogmatic worldview is not correct, they don't buy it. And then they kind of reinforce one another because, again, they have that idea like we are the enlightened ones.
Yeah. Well, they become very radicalized. And for a lot of these people, it's a cult. It's a religion.
Yes.
It's something that their entire identity is backed on. And if you're one of these people, go outside, touch grass, live life. And then you'll start to understand. And this is, I think, the problem with social media engineering. This is the problem with echo chambers. This is the problem with people just kind of hearing their own voices regurgitated back to them and not getting a different spectrum of information that, of course, could question their perceived norms. I think you need to question yourself in a healthy way. There's different radicalization pathways for a lot of different individuals. But for me, if I would be talking to one of these radicalized individuals, I would just say, hey, if you think you could do a better job than we're doing,
do it.
We need more people to help us. We need more people to get active. We need more people to get engaged. Maybe it would be beneficial for you as an individual, instead of being a negative Nancy, you be proactive. You do something outside of your norms, outside of just criticizing and poo-pooing everything and being a Debbie Downer. How about you get active and get engaged? Mm-hmm. Let's see what impact you can make on this world. And when you start focusing on the positive and when you start focusing on action, your whole kind of mindset changes. But these people are so spun up by these kind of echo chambers that for some it feels hopeless. It's not. I think we still have to try to reach out to those people. I think those people mean good.
Yes.
And when you mean good, let's do good. Let's you're coming from the right place here of having critical, you know, skepticism. But now let's add in the critical thinking here. Now let's, instead of just judging people, instead of just casting stones, let's see what you got. Let's see what you could build. Let's do this. And then you'll learn that it's a lot harder than it actually looks like.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different spiritual battles. There's a lot of larger kind of ethical questions that you're faced. There's a lot of different challenges that you never thought. But challenges is what makes you have an awesome and incredible life. If you don't challenge yourself, if you're just living a life of comfort, if you're just living a life of being an armchair quarterback, you're not really living a life. You're kind of just spectating everything. Get in the fight. We're not doing well off as kind of a Western civilization. As far as everything that's happening with our health, our mental well-being, our physical shapes as well, we're not doing too good. We need all the help we could get active, get engaged, do some good things, change your reticular activation system, and start to actually move forward in a proactive way where people could judge you by the fruits of your labor and not just by some snotty person making some kind of comments online. I don't let those people bother me.
Yeah.
You know, people always say they have all these theories about me just like they did about you. Cool. Like that's fine. You can have all the theories you want. But what do you got to show for yourself? What are you going to do in this life? And I'm not going to judge you either way, but you have a life to live. Why do you want to be so negative? Why do you want to
I think an incredibly important heuristic, which often just gets lost, especially when people kind of develop this social media brain or the political brain or whatever it is I think a useful heuristic and question to constantly ask is just like, is this useful? Like what is useful and what is helpful?
Yeah.
Right. It's even for the people who are like, look, I want to fight this cause. And by the way, this could be for people on any side of the political aisle. I feel the same with some of these, you know, whether people are on these woke left progressives or some of the people who are like.
But even on the right, there's a cancer within the right. We're focusing about calendars and Vivek Ramaswamy having a T-shirt that some people were triggered by. And I'm like, look what the other side is doing.
Useful?
Yeah.
Helpful?
Yeah. Why are we discussing calendars and cringy T-shirts? Like, I'm the king of cringy T-shirts. But why? Why are we focusing on this stupid issue? Mike Cernovich made the point a couple weeks ago, saying, you know, they're throwing political opposition leaders in prison. We're arguing about calendars.
Yes.
This makes no sense at all. What do you want to focus on? What do you want to build? What do you want to change in this world? There's a lot that needs changing. There's a lot that again, should be addressed. There's a lot of information that people don't know that leads them down a pathway where they are being victimized every single day. If you do what you're told, if you follow, and if you circle within the lines, you're essentially building a prison all around yourself that's not going to live a very successful, fruitful, amazing life. You have to question everything in a very good, healthy, skeptical way, and then make adjustments to your life that you're still kind of going in a positive direction, because they want you in a negative direction, and they will get you there either through this path or another path. But their actions, from my kind of larger understanding, and some people say that there's a grander conspiracy here. I believe that that's the case here. Some people say that that's just kind of human nature. Mm-hmm. I could also understand that argument as well. I believe from my 20 years in this and doing research and talking to a lot of the top kind of people in this, that a lot of this is deliberate. Yes. I think there is a deliberate agenda to make you fat, sick, and dumb, to make you a consumer, to make you pathetic, to make you not have a family, to make you addicted to online short dopamine hits that you get through pleasure centers that you think are benefiting you in the short term, but in reality, these are the larger shackles that are being built around your wrists every single day that you willingly put on yourself. And you could break those shackles at any moment, at any time, with just saying enough is enough. Let's focus on me right here. Let's focus on my life. Let's make sure that I'm a positive impact to this world. Let's make sure that I am more that I am morally aligned, that I am thinking of the good things, that I'm setting goals, that I'm reaching them, that I'm celebrating them, that I'm enjoying this life. And then once you start doing that, life becomes a lot more worthwhile. It becomes a lot more worth fighting for, more living for. You have a bigger aptitude towards standing up for yourself once you respect yourself.
Absolutely.
The problem is the system all around you makes sure that you disrespect yourself in so many different ways. And the biggest one is short-term pleasures.
Yes.
Not prioritizing hard work, not prioritizing sacrifice, making that something that you should always avoid, when in reality, if you want to have a fruitful, very happy life, you go for the hardest challenges. You find the biggest thing that you could carry, you pick it up and you carry it and you walk with it as much as you can. And once you do that, once you achieve something in this life, once you start doing things and patting yourself on the back and saying, yes, I got this, life is completely different.
Absolutely, yep. Man. Of all the different issues that you just brought up, or even some that are outside of it, you talked about mental health, you talked about physical health, we could talk about the economy, we could talk about crime, we could talk... There's a lot of different things that are going on. There's ways that the Western world in general, including the USA, there's aspects in which it is moving forward and things are a lot better now than they were 50 years ago. But there are also other metrics, both tangible and intangible, where it's very clear that we are declining or regressing. Out of all those issues, which one do you find the most troubling?
For the first time ever, life expectancy is going
just
down.
Exactly.
And a lot of people don't realize this. They think, oh, yeah, there's too many people in this world. We got to depopulate them. That's not true at all. What I find most troubling is mental health.
Okay.
And I think a lot of it is correlated with the gut, because if you have someone that doesn't have a gut that's running optimally, that is filled with seed oils, that is filled with high fructose corn syrup, that is filled with antibiotics that rob you of having a good, proper gut biome, your gut doesn't produce the right brain chemicals through your brain to run optimally. And to run in a good way. When you have people who are so negatively affected through their health, their mental health is the biggest aspect of it that kind of perpetrates and continues them in this larger loop of self-destruction,
yes,
of hating themselves, not liking themselves, of not having any respect for themselves. And again, that's where the system wants you. And this is why I've throughout the last few years that I'm like, I started to take my own health seriously, because I didn't for so long. You know, I used to smoke, I used to drink, I used to party, I used to travel over the world and just live a very reckless life. And I didn't really have much respect for my physical body. If you don't have respect for your physical body, you don't have respect for anything. So I think now, being on this kind of larger health journey, and again, I'm not perfect. I have cheat days too, and I mess up sometimes as well. But that's a part of not taking things too seriously, but also just following on my trajectory.
Yes.
You know, I might mess up 80-20. I might mess up sometimes, but I'm going to still keep going in this direction. I'm still going to go to the gym. I'm still going to try to fast. I'm still going to try to supplement. I'm still going to, you know, do everything I need to do to move forward in a positive life and direction.
I think a big issue that's happening is that I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the sort of worship of science and scientism, or if it's just forgetting a lot of things that we've known for thousands of years. But something I've noticed in the West is that lots of problems are spoken about as if they're completely isolated from one another. So talking about just health, right? Lots of the way people speak about mental health and physical health and spiritual health, and you could even say economic health, and familial health, social health, they're all spoken about as if they're not interrelated, right? So people talk about mental health as if it's completely separate from physical health, which is absolutely not, right? Like they are strongly intertwined. I'd add in spiritual health, right? You add in the family, you add in the situation with the economy and everything. It's like all of these things are strongly connected. And sometimes they're spoken about quite seriously in isolation, right? Okay, cool. Let's have a conversation about the economy, right? We're both guys who are into Bitcoin. Let's talk about the money printer and let's talk about inflation and let's talk about this and this and this. But it's like, okay, well, what are the ramifications on that on family formation and family maintenance and men and women coupling up and getting married, having children, being able to afford children, being able to buy a house, all of these things. Okay. And now how is that related to, how does the food that people are eating or not eating integrate into that? Okay. What's the effect on, you know, family situations affect mental well-being, people's relationship with God or spirituality affects their mental well-being. The food you're eating affects your mental well. And it's like, they're all just spoken as, I would look, just take this pill. Mm-hmm. Just take this pill, right? Just
the,
have this
the quick and easy way.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, I don't know, someone wants, you know, let's take an obvious problem in the USA, which always makes international news when it happens, right? The sort of mass shooting situations, mm-hmm. mass shooters, the school shootings, that kind of things. And it's like, you know, why is this happening? Da, da, da. All of the conversation is about firearms. It's all about guns. There's no conversation about, okay, what?
SSRIs, mental health.
Yes, like the family, right? Yep. What kind of families are there?
Was there a father in this kid's life?
Was there a father? Like, what was it? And it's just, the conversations are so narrow. It's like, I'm like, how many times is this same situation going to happen and you have the same stupid conversation about how many bullets should be allowed in a magazine or whether, you know, this gun should be like they're there talking about AR-15s. Something happened with a pistol and they're there talking about, you know, AR-15s. By the way, the same similar thing happens in the UK, but in the UK, it's just with knives.
Yep.
Right. In the UK, the conversation is about, man, do we need to make it harder to buy knives or maybe you should only allow like blade lengths up to a certain. I'm like, guys. When are we going to have this serious conversation about like absent fathers? When are we going to have a serious conversation about some of the aspects in the culture and the way that people are being programmed in a way that they don't value human lives? What are we going to have a serious conversation about young men feeling a lack of purpose and meaning and a lack of guidance? When are we going to talk about the type of situation that you lived through going to that type of school that you went to through in New York City, right? What made that kid become a bully? What was he going through in the home that made him become a bully? And now this is being passed on. Like those conversations are not happening on any serious level. It's just like the problem manifests in the most horrible way possible. And then suddenly everyone's scratching their heads like, oh, like how did this happen? This just fell out the sky. And it's like, no, it didn't fall out the sky. A mental health crisis didn't fall out the sky. A fentanyl crisis didn't fall out the sky. Rises in violence and crime, like whatever the things that people are concerned about. The obesity. Mm-hmm. Obesity is up to 40% now in this nation, right? It used to be under 5%. In under 100 years, you've gone from under 5% to 40%. And it's like, is this all just by magic or can we have this conversation?
Nope, you sure can't because there's a calendar out there that has some spicy stuff on it and we got to discuss that and that's it. Yeah. But no, the points that you brought up are very important here because if you really wanted to stop a lot of this, we would be having a conversation about Big Pharma and their overprescription of antidepressants. We would be talking about SSRIs. We would even be talking about antibiotics that also are overprescribed, overused here in the United States. Again, great thing when you need them, saved so many people's lives. But overprescribed, overused here in the United States where now there's like antibiotic resistant strains of bacteria out there that are absolutely dangerous and wreaking havoc on local hospitals. Single parent households, another really important issue that we should be having an adult serious conversation about.
And by the
way,
it's important for people to know that the USA is number one in both of those things. USA has the highest percentage of the population on antidepressants in the world. And the USA, at least amongst developed countries, but I believe amongst every single country in the world, has the highest rate.
especially amongst white
growing up in single parenthood.
Especially when it comes to white women, their use of antidepressants
like one quarter
through the roof, and that's just absolutely terrifying when you learn about how people are just being kind of zapped and being zapped. And again, I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not here telling you what to do.
But
for some people, it does help.
A reason I'm interrupting there is because I think that's also part of the problem. The idea that you have to have a PhD or a doctor to join, to connect dots or to ask questions. Yeah. It's like, you don't need to be a medical doctor to look at it and go, wait, how is one in four people in like on this group on antidepressant? Like, okay, that's kind of gnarly. You look at another country and it's 1 in 100. And then you look here and it's like 1 in 4. It's like, okay, there's something going on here. This is not normal. You could even just look back. Okay, what was the number 30, 40 years ago? I actually looked at this just today. I think since, someone can fact check me on this, but I think between 1988 and 2010, the usage rates of antidepressants in the USA tripled within that time frame. Tripled.
Yeah.
So 1988 to 2010. I don't know what the numbers are now in 2024, but that's, I don't exactly. I won't know every single reason for that, but I can certainly be like, okay, that's weird. Yeah. That's strange.
It's almost as if our government has been hijacked by special interest groups that are going to be doing anything and everything just to make a killing.
Never.
Literally and figuratively. It's almost as if maybe that's happening right now, and the government is not working on our behests. So I agree with your sentiment, but I also know other individuals who have used it who do say, hey, this helped me a lot. The conversation needs to be started because it is overprescribed, it is overused, and people are being zombified in very horrible ways where it becomes very destructive for them to have any kind of relationship that is wholesome or that is reciprocal in any way. To speak on this larger kind of problem that you brought up, it even becomes more sinister than that when you look up the kind of corporate media coverage of these kind of mass shooting events, because there have been psychological studies showing specifically when you show the shooter's face, when you make it about them, you glorify them and you inspire other people to do the same. Mm-hmm. And I've been saying this from the very beginning, and other content creators have been saying this too, saying, hey, let's stop glorifying these guys. Let's stop putting their names out there. Let's stop making them infamous, because we're only going to create copycat-like incidences. And the corporate media never learns, and they keep doing it again and again and again. When it's a sports ball game, whenever they have someone run on stage and run on the court, they made it an issue that they're never going to be showing them, because it's going to get other people to do the same thing. Why don't we do that for mass shootings? It shouldn't be a government thing. It should be a moral thing. It should be an ethical thing. But we should be focusing more on the victims. We should be having more deeper conversations about the issues that actually spurred this on.
Yes.
And this is why I brought up fatherless homes and SSRIs. And the big pharma involvement here, because to me, you really want to stop this. You address that. You don't punish someone because of someone else's actions. You don't take something away because someone else has it, because someone else did something bad. That makes no kind of logical sense at all. And I recently saw a meme of a SWAT team breaking down someone's door and then telling a woman that they have to take her car because someone was in a car accident down the street from them. That kind of logic doesn't make sense. You can't punish law-abiding, innocent civilians that didn't do anything wrong when you're a part of a government that perpetrates this problem, and then a part of a corporate media system that incentivizes it and promotes it so it happens again and again and again. So there's a lot of real life issues that we should be addressing that is just on a micro level. But I think the larger kind of bigger problem than just mass shootings. Mass shootings, everyone likes to talk about them because they're sensationalistic. They're something that the corporate media loves to talk about. They get everyone's attention because of all the trauma, because of all the kind of psychological aspects of this. But the larger issue at hand is the larger fertility crisis that's happening. That is absolutely huge. Mm-hmm. That absolutely is going to lead to more devastation, more pain, more suffering than any of these mass shootings. So if you look at males and especially babies when they're being born right now, we have to be careful with the language here, but they're being born with smaller and smaller reproductive organs. Mm-hmm. Males on average are being found to have less and less sperm, being less and
1%
less fertile. They're finding microplastics in people's blood and in people's lungs. Mm-hmm. They're finding men who are becoming more and more effeminized. They're finding people whose hormones are absolutely disrupted, And then the whole Medical Science Institute kind of scratches their head like, oh, we don't know what's going on here. I think the people are finding out what's going on here. A lot of them are finding it too late, as there's new studies highlighting how 1 in 4 couples are having a hard time conceiving a baby.
Yep.
Those are tragic, devastating numbers that are going to be absolutely brutal on the future of this country. And along with Elon Musk, I agree with him. We are dealing with a population crisis that's going to be severe. It's going to be very troubling, and it's going to lead to the utter destruction of civilization. Unless we start fixing it now, unless we start having real conversations about it now, there's no going back to us being fully depopulated.
Yeah.
And that's terrifying. And that, to me, should be what we should be raising the alarm bells. That's what we should be discussing. That's the main issue that we should be addressing, especially as males growing up here. Check your testosterone levels. Get your blood tested. Make sure that you're not being zapped by forever chemicals, all these plastics and all these other hormone disruptors that are all around you. They're in your underwear. They're in your pants. They're in your cooking wear. They're in your furniture. They're in your car. They're in your food. They're everywhere. Now, you know, I'm trying to make sure I don't become too paranoid.
Yes.
But how can you not become too paranoid when almost everything here is filled with a lot of bad stuff that kind of leads into you losing your fertility, you losing your kind of power and energy for life.
Do you know, man, there's so many directions I can go on this now. You know, a thought that jumped into my mind right now is that it's increasingly dangerous and not good enough to simply be average.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think you could somewhat rate or judge how healthy a society or a culture is in some ways by what the average looks like, right? So let's say in 2024, average is overweight, if not obese, you know, earning X amount, very easy to psyop, like you talk about all these issues, right? Like being average now is like, average is not healthy. Average used to be healthy, right? Like the average American or the average person in the UK or whatever, like the average person was healthy. They were mentally healthy. They were physically healthy. Their family was probably together. The divorce rates used to be well under 10%. Most people weren't coming from broken families. You know, people have, you know, some type of relationship with God. They have a social circle. They have a sense of meaning and purpose. Men know what it is to be masculine. Women know what it is to be feminine. People are getting married. They're forming families and so on. And a lot of that is still happening, but it's all declining. It's all declining. It's more and more where if you are excelling in one or multiple of these things, you're more of an outlier, right? Yep. You're more of an outlier. People are like, oh, wow, like that's impressive. Oh, wow, you're in shape. Great job. Oh, wow.
You could do a push-up? You could do a pull-up? No.
I had a clip go viral with millions and millions. I think it got like 8 million views or something on Instagram alone, where I was having this conversation with my friend, and I brought up the point that the average man cannot do a single pull-up.
That's crazy.
That's a fact.
Yep.
That's not like me being harsh or trying to like drop, but I'm like, the average man cannot do one pull-up. And I'm like, that is not good. Like even when it comes to the military and recruitment or whatever, like something, is it like over half the population now? It doesn't
40% doesn't can't pass the physical test. Is absolutely insane.
Yeah, well, and it's a basic a basic test, and it's just like, man, you know, there was a time when that number would have been like, you know, 95% of people could pass it, and then it drops to 80, and then it drops to 70. You're just like, this trajectory is concerning. And It's weird as well, because I do think a lot of this is sort of the inevitable downstream consequences of technology, in fact.
Yeah.
Technology is cool, right? We wouldn't be able to do what we're doing right now and get it out to thousands and thousands of people without technology. But when you think of all these technologies that have been introduced, in particular, let's say over the past 70 to 80 years, it's like, well, that's where we are now. Like plastic is cool. Like, great. We have plastic. Plastic is great. But it's like, oh, the plastic is getting in our bodies. We're eating it. We're drinking it. And now this is having impacts on people's hormone levels. And this is having impacts on people's fertility. And now people are struggling to reproduce or whatever the case may be. You look at other technologies. Great. We've got social media. We've got smartphones and all that. But ooh, now that we're 15 plus years into this, what's the impact on young people's mental health? What's the impact on, you know, men and women even liking each other and being able to find each other and couple up and have and maintain healthy relationships? What are the downstream impacts here or there? And it's a weird one, because if you look at the world, I mean, you were talking about the fertility crisis. Let me give you the most terrifying stat on that issue. So South Korea has the lowest birth rate in the world.
Wow.
South Korea is down to 0.7 births per woman. 0.7. So keep in mind, replacement is 2.1. I think the USA, I think, is around 1.6 or so. Korea is down to 0.7. So at the current rate they're going, for every 100 living South Koreans, there will be 4 great-grandchildren.
Wow.
So they are posed for a 95% plus population decline over the next few generations, unless that changes.
Yeah.
And just that alone, like, it's such a terrifying stat that I'm like, I don't want to believe it. I'm like, no, that can't be right. Like, it's just like, that is devastating, you know? And you just fast forward, I don't know, 100 years from now or 150 years from now, and you're just thinking, okay, what is the world going to look like? Like, what are nations going to look like? Are certain peoples even still going to exist and be there? And I think part of this issue, the reason why it doesn't click for most people, is because they just see certain stats, right? So the world's population is still increasing. And the population of most countries is still increasing. But people don't realize that that's primarily because people are just living longer.
Yeah. And immigration.
And
too.
Then immigration, yeah, on top, right? The immigration kind of hides the real numbers. So somewhere like Japan or Korea, it doesn't obscure it, because they don't have such high immigration rates. Mm-hmm. But in a country like, you know, any country in Western Europe, the USA, Canada, UK, Australia, it's like, all right, you just bring in a bunch of people and you kind of jack up the numbers artificially. And it's a weird one, man, because I'm someone who's like eternally optimistic. I'm a very optimistic person. We've talked about optimism. But with some of these issues and the way they're interconnected, I do often think, and the reason I even think about this is because I do genuinely care about humanity. I do care about people. I like human beings. As frustrating as they can be, I love human beings. And I'm just like, man, how do you fix some of these things at scale? I don't know. I genuinely don't know what can be done. I can think of I know what works for an individual. If an individual is obese and comes to me and is like, hey, Zuby, I need a nutrition program. I need exercise. I need to know how to do this. I can help an obese person get to a healthy body weight, and I've done it before.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do that across hundreds of millions of people.
It's almost as if there's like an artificial intelligence using soft kill weapons with comfort, trying to eliminate us, or a technocratic elite that's trying to live forever and depopulate the world. It's almost as if something like that's happening. and for me, I'm more kind of conspiracy minded, and that's kind of what I see happening here. And this is why I think independent media raising the alarm bells, telling people to get happy and healthy, is absolutely critically important right now. It's something that I'm trying to do myself. It's an ongoing battle. How do we have optimism when the populations of the world are just being eugenicized and depopulated at such an alarming level? That's a very good kind of question that I struggle with myself, because it's not an easy one to answer. But we are kind of merging into a society where we have the haves and the have-nots. Mm-hmm. We are kind of breaking, and where are you going to be on that spectrum is something that I think a lot of people don't ask themselves.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, being healthy is becoming more of an anomaly, which is wild. So, you know, you can't have the light without the darkness. Mm. A lot of darkness. Mm-hmm. So that leaves us with a lot of potential. That's how I just try to hack myself. Like, we're really bad, but it can only get better from here. And like, I might be naive, and I might be, you know, ignorant on some levels of understanding of it, but I refuse to be one of those victims.
Yes.
And I think respecting yourself, loving yourself, and striving to fight this. You could fight this nonviolently. You could fight this without having to physically engage or shoot a single bullet. You could fight this with information. And the people who come to this kind of information, they have a choice to make. Are you going to be active? Are you going to be engaged? Are you going to do something with it? Or are you just going to see it as a form of entertainment and move on?
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this, this is a rallying call, a battle cry here of the fifth generational warfare that we're all in. You're in a war, whether you realize it or not. Mm-hmm. You're being defeated. You're being destroyed. Are you going to start to stand up for yourself peacefully, nonviolently, in a way that you resist through becoming an incredible version of yourself? Or are you going to continue to be the victim here? And every little macro, every little kind of small decision that you make here, everything you do boils down to this larger kind of energy that you will decide to, of course, prioritize and move forward with. Mm. I choose to try to prioritize and move forward in a way that I think, at least for me, is the best path forward for me. What's the best path for you? Even you just kind of taking time out of your day and writing out your life goals or writing out things you want or you want to accomplish and trying to understand it from a non-ego-based level is something that will begin the process. And I talk about this a lot through my like kind of membership group, lukeandfiltered.com, where I specifically try to help people as much as I can. And I say, hey, do a vision board.
Yeah.
Try to at least break the conditioning in a way where you could just try to imagine something outside of what we're all going through right now.
Yeah.
And just that imagining, just that kind of thinking, I think is leading people to understand the world that we're living in, understanding that there's a war against them, their minds, their health, and them. And then the choice is theirs. Yeah. Who am I to try to live their life? Who am I to tell them what they should or shouldn't be doing? I could only control myself.
Yep.
I only have control of my life. I'm going to try to be an example to other people. Amen. And if you want to do it, do it. If you don't, that's your choice. That's your free will to determine for yourself. And I hope you guys do, though. I really hope you do. I'm rooting for you guys. I'm like, please, 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 please.
But
you can only lead a horse to water. You can't force it to drink.
Absolutely, so. Man. Look, if you really, really want to fight the system, go out there and be great and enjoy yourself in the process.
Absolutely.
Right? Don't become a doomer. Don't become fully demoralized, right? You can be very aware of the problems and issues that are happening in your country or happening in the world, and you can outright refuse to be demoralized. You can say, look, all of this is coming down the pipeline. There's a psyop to make me unhealthy, to make me infertile, to make me mentally ill, to make me reliant on drugs, to prevent me from having a family and being happy and whatever, to push me away from God. And you can just reject it all, and you can go out there and be great and happy and successful in multiple fields regardless. And you'll inspire other people in the process. And it's far more helpful than just whining, yelling, complaining into the ether on the internet.
Yeah, it's better than being a doomer, black-pilled Debbie Downer.
Yeah, don't be that guy. I genuinely understand the temptation. I genuinely see how people get to that stage.
It's easy. It's convenient. But, yeah. Everything is just figured out for you. You don't have to think at all. You don't have to do anything at all. And you seek comfort. You seek that dopamine hit. Stop! Stop. What are you doing? Like, make yourself uncomfortable. Grow, build, expand. Amen to everything you said. I couldn't agree more with it.
No doubt, bro. Luke, where can people find and follow you online?
I have a YouTube channel that probably gets censored a lot on youtube.com/wearechange. But the best website, I have like a private membership group where I try to help people. And I go through different health stuff myself to kind of test it and then tell people about it. And I try to give as much unsolicited advice as I can on lukeunfiltered.com, and that's pretty much the best way to get active, engaged, and to talk to me one-on-one, and it also helps sustain and grow my independent media operation, so that would be the best way. Awesome. Thank you so much. This was a great conversation. This was it wasn't superficial. We talked about a lot of different stuff, and it was really great questions here.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, man. Great to talk to you, Luke.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.